This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Thank you guys for the support. This episode, we're going to talk about the Capitol Hill building, and we're also going to talk about a situation that happened during the FDR administration that is exactly like the Capitol Hill building, with just a little bit of a difference. But before we get started, here's some church announcements and prints. I want you guys to go on my IMDb page. You could just type in Jeffrey Frazier or Black Wall Street Chronicles, and I'm registered on IMDb as a producer, director, and a writer. You should also follow me on my Instagram, which is BlackHage840. When you go on BlackHage840, you can go to my bios. It has my Twitter, it has my Twitch, and it has my Facebook page. So, now we're going to get started and talk about what happened in this crazy Trump situation last week. I'm going to read some articles from the Washington Post that I'm reading from my Amazon tablet. And then I'm going to give my thoughts. Dozens of people on terrorist watch lists came to D.C. the day of the riot. Most are suspected white supremacists. By Devin Barrett, Spencer S. Hissu, and Marissa J. Lane. Those are the people in terrorist watch list were in Washington for pro-Trump events January 6th, the day that they ended in Kiev a crime rampage when a violent mob stormed the U.S. Capitol. According to the people familiar with evidence gathered in the FBI's investigation, the majority of the watch list individuals in Washington today that are suspected white supremacists who passed conduct so alarmed investigators that their names have been previously entered into the National Terrorist Screening Database, or the TSDB. A massive set of names flagged as potential security risks. These people said, the watch list is longer and separate from the no-fly list government maintains to prevent terrorism. Suspects from boarding airplanes are those listed are not automatically barred from any public or commercial spaces, current and former officials said. The presence of so many watch list individuals in one place without more robust security measures to protect the public is another example of the intelligence failures preceding last week's fatal assault that sent lawmakers running for their lives. Some current and former law enforcement officials argue. The revelation follows a Washington Post report earlier this week detailing the FBI's failure to act aggressively on an internal intelligence report of internet discussions about plans to attack Congress, smash windows, break down doors, and get violent, go there ready for war. Other current and former officials said that the presence of those individuals is an unsurprising consequence of having thousands of fervent Trump supporters gather for this bill as a final chance to voice opposition to Joe Biden's certification as the next president. Still, the revelation underscores the limitations of such watch lists. Although they are meant to improve information gathering and sharing among investigating agencies, they are far from a foolproof means of detecting threats ahead of time. Since its creation, the terrorist watch list, which is maintained by the FBI, has grown to include hundreds of thousands of names. Placing someone's name on the watch list does not mean that they will be watched all of the time, or even much of the time, for reasons of both practicality and fairness. But it can alert different parts of the government, such as boarding agents and state police, to look closely at a person, at certain individuals they encounter. It is unclear whether any of the dozens of individuals already arrested for alleged crimes at the Capitol are the terrorist watch list. The U.S. government is committed to protecting the United States from terrorist threats and attacks and seeks to do this in a manner that protects the freedoms, privacy, civil rights, and liberties of U.S. persons and other individuals with rights under U.S. law. A U.S. official said, adding that because of scrutiny, security concerns, The government has a policy of neither confirming nor denying a person's watch list status. The FBI declined to comment. The riots' political aftershocks led to the House of Representatives on Wednesday to impeach President Trump for allegedly inciting the violence. His second impeachment in a four-year term, it may have significant consequences within law enforcement and national security agencies. Inside the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, officials are grappling with thorny questions about race, terrorism, and free speech rights as some investigators question whether more could not have been done to prevent last week's violence. While some federal officers think that the government should more aggressively investigate domestic terrorists and extremists, others are concerned with the FBI, DHS, and other agencies may overreact to the recent violence by going too far in surveilling First Amendment activities like online discussions. Some law enforcement officials said that they are shocked by the backgrounds of some individuals under investigation in connection with the Capitol riot. A pool of suspects that includes current and law enforcement and military personnel, as well as senior business executives, middle-aged business owners. I can't believe some of the people I'm seeing, the official said. The TSDB, often referred to within government as simply the watch list, is overseen by the FBI's Terror Screening Center, which was created in the wake of the 9/11 attacks carried out by Al-Qaeda. The watch list can be used as both investigative and early warning tool, but its primary purpose is to help various government agencies to keep abreast of what individuals seen as potential risks are doing and what they are traveling, according to people familiar with the work who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity because the work is sensitive. Often that can be done as a silent hit, meaning if someone on a watch list is stopped for speeding, the information is temporarily entered into the database without the individual, even the officer who wrote the tick, ever knowing, one person said. After the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing, for instance, the FBI quickly searched a similar database to see which people on it had recently traveled to that city and raised other suspicions about possible involvement. Before the January 6th gathering of pro-Trump protesters, FBI agents visited a number of suspected extremists and advised them against traveling to the nation's capital. Many complied, but according to people familiar with the sprawling investigation, dozens of others, whose names appear on the terrorist watch list, apparently intended, based on the information reviewed by the FBI. Separately, while the FBI is hunting hundreds of rioting suspects who've dispersed back into their hometowns, federal agents are increasingly focused on alleged leaders, members, supporters of the Proud Boys, a male chauvinistic group with ties to white nationalism, these people said. The Proud Boys participating in last week's protests, and FBI agents are taking a close look at what roles, if any, their adherents may have had in organizing, directing, or carrying out violence, according to people familiar with the matter. The group's chairman, Enrique Tarrio, had planned to attend Trump's January 6th rally, but was arrested when he arrived in D.C. and charged with misdemeanor destruction of property in connection with the burning of a Black Lives Matter banner taken from a black church during an earlier protest in Washington. He is also accused of felling possession of two extended gun magazines. Tarrio told the Post on Wednesday that his group did not organize the Capitol siege. If they think we are organizing going into the Capitol, they must be sadly mistaken, he said. Our plan was to stay together as a group and just enjoy the day. We weren't going to do a night march or anything like that. That's as far as our day. Tarrio says actively discouraging members from attending planned armed marches scheduled Sunday and a million militia march next week when Biden is inaugurated. Proud Boys, he said, on a rally fees and will not organize any events for the next month or so. It's unclear how many Proud Boys devotees will abide by the freeze or if such a shutdown might lessen the FBI's interest in the group. Even before the January 6th riot, federal and local investigators were working to understand the group's plans, goals, and activities. Probably some federal law enforcement officials had described the group as roughly equivalent to a NISSID street gang that is guarded in an unusual degree of national attention. in part because Trump mentioned them specifically during his televised debates with Biden during the campaign. Other officials have expressed concern that the group may be growing rapidly into something more dangerous and directed. The FBI has already arrested dozens of accused rioters, and officials have pledged that in the cases of the most egregious conduct, they will seek to fire through rarely used charges like seditious conspiracy, which carries a potential 20-year prison sentence. The Bureau continues to face blowback over its handling of a January 5th internal report warning of discussions of the violence at the Congress the next day. Steven D'Antonio, the head of the FBI's Washington field office, claimed in the days after the riot that the Bureau did not have intelligence ahead of time indicating the rally would be anything other than a peaceful demonstration. On January 5th, the FBI report, written by the Bureau's office in Norfolk and reviewed by the Post, shows that this was not the case, and the Justice Department took steps indicating officials were at least somewhat concerned about the possible violence of that day. The Bureau of Prisons sent 100 officers to D.C. to supplement security at the Justice Department building, an unusual move similar to what the department did in June to respond to civil unrest stemming from racial justice protests. Mindful of the criticism that law enforcement took a heavy-handed, all-hands-on-deck approach to the Black Lives Matter protests in D.C. in the spring and summer, Justice Department officials deferred to the Capitol Police to defend their building and lawmakers there. Some former officials have questioned whether the FBI and Justice Department should have done more. It would not have been enough for the Bureau to simply share information, if did so, with the state and local law enforcement or federal partner agencies, said David Loughnan, a former Justice Department national security official. It was the Bureau's responsibility to quarterback a coordinated federal response as the crisis was unfolding in the days thereafter, and it was presently not clear to what extent the FBI asserted itself in a fashion during the exigencies of January 6th and the immediate aftermath. And that's the end of Max Subterwee's report. Okay. So, FBI, according to this report that was written by Deborah Barrett, Spencer S. Hsu, and Marissa J. Lang, that dozens of people on the terrorist watch list actually came to the riots, and they are all suspected to be white supremacists. I'm not surprised. So I'm going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I'm going to read more articles. Take care. I'll be back in a second. This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Thank you for waiting. I'm going to read the second article about the coup, or whatever you, anybody want to call that. I don't know what the heck I want to call that. It's just crazy. Trump brought leadership turmoil to security agencies. As the U.S. endures sensitive crisis, they're being run by acting officials. By Paul Sutton, Matt Safazi, and Nick Moroff. Three top federal agencies responsible for protecting the nation, the Departments of Justice, Departments of Homeland Security, are being run by acting officials as the United States endures one of its most sensitive national security crises. The leadership vacuum is the product of President Trump's tumultuous relationships with his cabinet secretaries and tendency to replace them for long periods of time with acting officials who lack center confirmation, a pattern that has led to turmoil atop critical federal agencies for much of his presidency. Never has the absence of confirmed leaders seemed more pronounced than now. All three agencies were being led by acting officials in the run-up to January 6th riot at the Capitol, where extremist Trump supporters who embraced the president's false claim of election fraud stormed the building to demand that lawmakers dispute President-elect Joe Biden's victory during a pro forma certification of the Electoral College vote. The events left five people dead, prompted second impeachment of Trump in just over a year, and raised serious questions about how the federal government failed to prepare for threats that in many cases were broadcast openly online. Now the agencies that are playing critical roles in high-stakes preparations for January 20th inauguration in an environment of increased security threats. When acting officials run critical agencies, they have reduced standing at the White House, according to the former top officials, who say that they can preclude uncomfortable but necessary discussions with the president. One of the central roles of a cabinet secretary to provide the president with advice that he needs to hear but does not want to hear. But if they are willing to walk on thin ice, they are all afraid to do that, said Jed Johnson, who served as President Barack Obama's second Homeland Security Secretary. Especially now with a few days left in the Trump administration, everyone has been distracted. No one was looking at their emerging crisis right in their midst. The makeshift leadership at the three agencies comes as Biden's risk starting his presidency without any of his cabinet's nominee confirmed. In the recent past, the Senate has tried to confirm at least few critical nominees immediately, so the president has some official in place in the event of the crisis. The last president to begin his tenure without any of his nominees confirmed on the first day was George H.W. Bush, who took office in 1989, according to the Center for Presidential Transition. In a letter on Tuesday, Senate Minority Leader Charles E. Schumer, who was poised to take over as majority leader on January 20, said that the riot demonstrated that the Biden administration would need Senate-confirmed officials in key national security cabinets post on day one. The Biden transition team said in a statement Wednesday that the confirmation hearing for Orlando Marcos, Biden's choice to run for the Department of Homeland Security, had been moved up in the aftermath of the riot. The Biden team called for swift hearings and confirmations and said it's focused on laying the groundwork for a smooth handoff in power. If Wednesday didn't underscore the importance of security in this country and collaboration of Homeland Security, the DOJ, and the DOD, I guess nothing in me memory will. The Tom Ridge who served as President George W. Bush Secretary of Homeland Security. It should cut through the nonsense, cut through the rhetoric, and accelerate the confirmation of President-elect's security team. The confirmation hearing for Marcos was moved up to January 19th after four former Homeland Security secretaries, including Johnson and Ridge, opted in the Washington Post, saying that the country couldn't afford one more day without a confirmed Department of Homeland Security Secretary. We need to return to regular order. We need to get the nominees confirmed. We need to get in there as Jenna Napolitano, Obama's first Homeland Security Secretary, and one of the four authors. The Trump administration's acting leaders at the Department of Justice, the Pentagon, and DHS have all faced scrutiny on their agenda's preparations ahead of the riot. At the Justice Department, Acting Attorney Jeff Rosen and FBI Director Christopher A. Wray, in particular, have been criticized for not more to articulate the threat. The day before the riot, the FBI office in Virginia had warned in an internal advisory that the extremists were preparing to commit violence at the Capitol. The FBI has insisted that the information was briefed to its Washington Field Office and Joint Terrorism Task Force, which includes representatives for local and federal law enforcement agencies, but the warning apparently did not generate enough alarm for the FBI or Justice Department to take more aggressive measures to help secure the Capitol. FBI officials said Wray was not briefed on the Norfolk document in particular, because it was considered a raw intelligence product more appropriate for consideration by the officials on the ground, and investigators had not identified particular people behind the threats. But Wray was briefed more broadly on threats his agents were seeing online and the information that FBI sources were passing on about possible extremists traveling to the Capitol, the official said. It is unclear whether Rosen was told in advance of the document. Stephen M. D'Antonio, the head of the FBI's Washington Field Office, had claimed in days after the riot that the FBI did not have information beforehand, saying anything other than that a rally was planned. The Justice Department took other steps that indicated that officials were at least somewhat aware of possible violence on January 6th. That week, the Bureau of Prisons took the unusual move of sending 100 officers to D.C. to supplement security at the Justice Department building. Officials have said the FBI set up two command posts in D.C., and agents visit some suspected extremists to investigate them or discourage them from traveling to Washington. Mindful of the criticism they faced for their heavy-handed approach to racial justice protests in June, Justice Department officials deferred to the Capitol Police, which prefers to Congress, to defend their building and lawmakers there, a responsibility that falls outside the department's direct purview. It would not have been enough for the Bureau to simply to share information if it did so with the state and local law enforcement and federal partner agencies, said David Loughman, a former Justice Department national security official. It was the Bureau's responsibility to quarterback a coordinated federal response. He added, there should have been as quickly as possible a press conference where the Attorney General of the United States and FBI Director stood shoulder to shoulder and gave a full-throated denunciation. Justice Department spokesman Mark Romaldi said Rosen has directed the agency to share with the public the response to the Capitol attack quickly and transparently. In addition to several public statements, Romaldi said that Rosen directed the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office overseeing the investigation to share information with Congress and had to regularly brief the public through press conference and other media availabilities to address the progress that the department is making in holding attackers accountable. The Pentagon has also faced blowback over accusations that its leaders did not send D.C. Guard to the Capitol fast enough upon receiving urgent requests from the city officials and the Capitol Police. The Defense Department said the Capitol Police declined offers for the Guard backup ahead of the January 6th event and did not make a plan with the military in advance, so the Guard was in position to respond urgently to an insurrection in the building. Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy, who was confirmed by the Senate and played a leading role in the preparations, denied that loyalty to Trump at the Pentagon played any role with the speed that the Guard responded to the riot. McCarthy told the Post in an interview Tuesday that the military moved as fast as possible from a cold start, having not prepared a contingency to respond to such an incident because the Capitol Police had not requested military assistance in advance. The reasons for the absence of leaders confirmed their positions atop the Pentagon, the Justice Department, and the Department of Homeland Security ahead of the riot are varied, but they all trace back to Trump's habit of dismissing cabinet secretaries, often when he felt they was not supporting his political agenda. Acting Defense Secretary Christopher C. Miller, a former top counterterrorism official, took the helm of the Pentagon in November after Trump fired Marty Esper in the days after the election. Trump had grown angry with the Esper because of his opposition to the deployment of the active duty troops in response to racial justice protests in Washington last year. Rosen has been running the Justice Department since last month when William P. Barr resigned. Barr had been one of Trump's most loyal foot soldiers before the presidential turn on him, where he did not announce investigations of Trump's political foes and disputed White House claims of widespread election fraud. The DHS, which oversees the Secret Service, the main agency leading security preparations for Biden's inauguration, have been in leadership turmoil for months. The department has Senate confirmed their chief since Trump ousted Christian Nielsen in April 2019. Chadwell's sudden resignation Monday after serving 14 months as acting Homeland Security Secretary has deepened the turmoil at the sprawling agency, which was established after the attacks of September 11, 2001, with the basic mission of protecting an area of government competence and stability. In security to DHA staff members Monday, Wolf attributed his decision to step down to recent events and court ruling challenging his authority to implement new policies on the grounds that his appointment violated federal vacancy rules. Under the George W. Bush and Obama administrations, DHS secretaries remain in their jobs for years. Under Trump, the department has had unprecedented turnover in its highest levels, as well as multiple prolonged vacancies in other senior positions. Career officials at the department have reportedly expressed frustration about the White House improvisational management of DHS, characterized by sudden firings and a flagrant disregard for the norms of the Senate confirmation process. Wolf was replaced as acting secretary on Tuesday by Federal Emergency Management Agency Administrator Peter Gaynor. Gaynor is the sixth person the president has installed to run DHS. The department has had only six other leaders in 14 years before Trump. One senior DHS official who works with Gaynor applauded the move and described him as the right choice for the short but potentially challenged leadership assignment. "He is perfect," said official. Was not authorized to speak to reporters. "What we need for the last 10 days is an emergency manager." Lawmakers has expressed frustration and dismay about the lack of a DHA role before, during a mob attack on the Capitol. Dozens of armed DHS personnel from the Customs and Borders Protection have been put on standby ahead of the event and were stationed at the Reagan Building but were not deployed to the Capitol, according to the CBP official. The Capitol Building must formally request help for the federal forces to enter the building. Johnson said DHS Office of Intelligence and Analysis, known as INA, appears to have failed to warn about the threat. "If the government is functioning properly, then the Department of Homeland Security should be the centerpiece of all this." The office was designed to promote intelligence sharing across the government. It was heavily criticized last summer for gathering off-source intelligence on sometimes violent protesters in Portland. Brian Murphy, a former head of office who was removed by Wolf last summer, filed a whistleblower complaint in September alleging he is urged to make changes to a threat assessment report examining public safety risks from domestic extremists, including right-wing groups. The complaint alleges that the second-ring DHS official, Ken Susanili, asked Murphy during several meetings in May and June to modify a section of his report on white supremacy in a manner that made it appear less severe, as well as include information of the prominence of violent white-wing groups, the complaint says. The DHS has produced numerous intelligence reports highlighting the heightened threat environment during the 2020-2021 election season, including to the extent which the political transition and the political polarization contributing to the mobilization of individuals to commit violence. The department said in a statement, to extent press reports suggest that INA did not believe events such as the certification of the Electoral College in effect, presenting a highly threat environment, but they are correct. They are incorrect, excuse me. To the extent press reports suggest that INA did not believe events such as the certification of the Electoral College in effect presented a highly threat environment, they are incorrect. But a DHS spokesperson confirmed to the NPR that his INA office did not produce any threat assessments specifically about the possibility of violence on January 6. Security for this inauguration will be run by the Secret Service, the DHS agency, and will be designated a national security event, which will show a high level of preparation. One of Wolf's final moves as acting secretary was to place the Secret Service in charge of security coordination, so on Wednesday, rather than January 19 as originally planned. The DHS said in a statement that the Secret Service has been working for years to make sure this inauguration is safe and secure. As many as 20,000 National Guard troops could be in the city for the event, the acting chief of police for district said Wednesday. One of the things that the federal government does well is after there has been a failure, they are overcorrect, Johnson said. My guess is that there are going to be massive levers of security at the inauguration. It is probably going to be the case that a chipmunk will not be able to penetrate the U.S. Capitol grounds without going through a metal detector. That right there is the second article. It talks about the leadership turmoil security agencies. Yeah, that's true. President Trump has fired a lot of people and very head of federal security agencies. It's causing this issue. You know, a foreign terrorist group will see what happened in a Capitol building and they'll use that disorganization that we have in Homeland Security to organize a terrorist attack that we will not be prepared for. So when Biden comes in, he automatically has to clean up that issue. It's difficult. Give me 1 second. I'm going to take a quick break and I'm going to read 2 more articles. And then after I read the 2 more articles, I am going to talk about the time where corporate America tried to throw a fascist coup d'etat against Franklin Delano Roosevelt and how it compares to what's going on now, okay? I'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
Melvin.
Hello, this is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Okay, thank you for listening to this podcast again. I'm going to read these two more articles, and then I'm going to talk about how FDR had the corporate America try to overthrow FDR on a coup. Attempted coup, just like that one that happened in January 6, 2021. Okay, now, with Trump supporters banned from Twitter, his supporters are parsing speeches for clues about what's next. Matusa Oliville and Isaac Stanley Becker. Shortly after President Trump was impeached a second time, he shared a 5-minute video on YouTube. From the Oval Office, Trump equivocally condemned the attack on the U.S. Capitol, saying violence and vandalism has absolutely no place in our country and no place in our movement. As the quick course through far-right channels, Trump's biggest supporters struggled to make sense of the comments. No mentions of Biden's transition, one user wrote in a Kunal forum, suggesting they meant Trump would remain in office after January 20. Another hearing and echo in the recording speculated that the president was preparing for a military takeover from a bunker. For most of his presidency, social media served as Trump's megaphone, allowing him to spread his message on all hours of the day and night. But since Trump was banned from Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for his role in the deadly siege on the U.S. Capitol, he's only communicated only sparingly with his supporters. The lack of direction has sparked confusion among the pro-Trump movement. Once his members could rely on the president for a clear, occasionally all-caps message about who to attack and what to believe. Now with Trump muted, they take it to parsing Trump's limited remarks for clues about what to expect on Inauguration Day and how the president plans to remain in power. There aren't an avenue listed for the president, so everything is open to interpretation, said Nicole Hemmer, a scholar at Columbia University and author of Messengers of the Right, a book about conservative media that has allowed a lot of conspiracy theories to flourish. Since last week, Trump supporters have been searched for signs that the president has moved to an alternate online platform, such as Gab, favored by someone on the far right. Some flocked to messaging app Telegram, which has been announced today that it added 25 million new users in the previous 72 hours. They Hold on. Yes? I'll be right back. Hey everyone, sorry for the long wait. I'm sorry about that. Now, as I was saying before I was interrupted, I'm gonna start the article again. With Trump banned from Twitter, his supporters are parsing speeches for clues about what's next. Bartusza Ogla and Isaac Stanley Becker. Shortly after President Trump was impeached for a second time, he shared a 5-minute video on YouTube. From the Oval Office, unequivocally condemned the attack on the U.S. Capitol, saying violence and vandalism have absolutely no place in our country and no place in our movement. As the clip coursed through far-right channels, Trump's biggest supporters struggled to make sense of the comments. No mention of Biden's transition, one user wrote in a QAnon forum, suggesting that meant Trump will remain in office on January 20th. Another hearing an echo in the recording speculated that the president was prepared for a military takeover from a bunker. The most of his presidency, social media served as Trump's megaphone, allowing him to spread his message on all hours of the day and night. But since Trump was banned from Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for his role in the deadly siege on the U.S. Capitol, he has communicated only sparingly with his supporters. The lack of direction has sparked confusion among the pro-Trump movement. Once his members could rely on the president for clear, occasionally all caps message about who to attack, what, and what to believe. Now with Trump muted, they take into parsing Trump's limited remarks for clues about what to expect on Inauguration Day and how the president plans to remain in power. There aren't anonymous messages from the president, so everything is to interpretation, said Nicole Hemmer, a scholar at Columbia University and the author of Messages of the Right, a book about conservative media that has allowed a lot of conspiracy theories to flourish. Since last week, Trump supporters have searched for signs. Oh my bleeping God, man. I'll be right back.
What you said?
Sorry about that. Since last week, Trump supporters had searched for signs that the president had moved to an alternative online platform, such as Gab, favored by some on the right. Some flocked to the messaging app Telegram, which has announced Tuesday that it added 25 million new users in the previous 72 hours. I'll be right back. I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry, guys. I'm quarantined inside my house. I'm not in the podcast studio. This is why I don't like doing long-con podcasts, because I'm constantly interrupted by frivolous things. Where was I? Since last week, Trump supporters have searched for signs that the president had moved to an online, alternate online platform, such as Gab, favored by the far right. Some flocked to the messaging app Telegram, which announced Tuesday that it had added 25 million new users in the previous 72 hours. They recirculated old tweets, searching for new clues about Trump's intentions, as well as about the world leaders willing to back his crusade against Silicon Valley. Paul Burton, an Atlanta-based follower of QAnon, explaining that in a phone interview that he was focused on Trump's tweet announcing he would not attend the inauguration, which Burton took that means that there will be no inauguration in January 20th. As they ponder next steps for the movement, debating whether or not how to protest this weekend and inauguration day. In a Telegram channel with nearly 20,000 members, some members wonder if the mass mobilization envisioned over the weekend was a trap set up by left-wing activists to discredit their movement. On Tuesday, Trump supporters thronged virtually at best, his first speech since his accounts were suspended. Hours before Trump delivered his remarks near the U.S.-Mexico border, more than 30,000 users were already logged in to watch the YouTube broadcast carried by Right Side Broadcasting Network. The conservative media group whose viewership has expanded its mainstream networks have stopped carrying the president's events live. The link has plastered across pro-Trump's groups and pages or Facebook names such as MAGA TV 2020. In these online forums, users were sharing right-wing news articles mocking the Democrats' response to the Capitol insurrection. By the time Trump concluded his speech, more than 80,000 users was logged on to watch. They listened as the president asserted that Democrats' impeachment push was the continuation of a witch hunt that has caused a tremendous anger, division, and pain. In Texas, Trump also declared that free speech is under assault like never before, echoing rhetoric that has been embraced by Trump loyalists scrambling to identify social media platforms that would not allow the president. Soon after his remarks, Trump's followers appended a rallying cry: refuse to be silenced, to notice for January 17 mobilizations in Washington and other state capitals across the country. The FBI has warned that these armed protests were being planned nationwide for the days leading up to President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration. Another member clipped Trump's comments for the tarmac en route to Texas that Democrats' impeach plans were causing tremendous danger to our country, as a way to swift blame to the president's Democrat adversaries, a position embraced by House members who stuck in by rejecting articles of impeachment. In a desperate bid to hear from the Trump's members, a New Jersey Woman for Trump and Law Enforcement for Life were also Tuesday recirculating a 10-minute address from Donald Trump Jr. delivered over the weekend. "You are very brave, just like your father," one user commented. In the video, the president's elder son asked people to input their email address on his website so he can communicate with them directly in the event he is booted from social media networking services. Matt Bernyard, a one-time Trump campaign operative who joined the president's quest to turn up evidence of fraud in the November election, said that Trump supporters are searching for alternative online platforms that guarantee unrestricted, strictest speech that offer encryption, which scrambles messages to make them intelligible only to the sender and the recipient. Telegram, he said, is a favorite substitute for Twitter. He has also had increasingly relied on Signal, another encrypted app that he trusts, because federal law enforcement uses it for communication with sources. In the waiting days of Trump's presidency, content moderation by social media companies has become the defining issue from some of his most prevalent supporters, who see that the president banned from Twitter and Facebook as a martyr for their cause. Reestablishing national unity is impossible when you have platforms that are interfering in the elections, Bernyard said, giving voice to a now common refraining among conservatives who had termed the charge of election interference used to describe the Kremlin's sweeping efforts in 2016 against Silicon Valley. It was only when he became a lame duck that large parts of the industry became seriously enforcing their policies against the president, however, as pre-election content moderation off his allies. Himmer said conservatives have fixated on crackdowns by large technology companies as they seek the conflict to rally around ahead of his Trump's departure from his White House. Trump supporters believe that he has been muzzled in silence and that this is ultimately a free speech issue, she said. To think that this is an issue of tech having become large and powerful, and the message is getting amplified across right-wing media. In a short address Wednesday, Trump steered clear of references to social media and free speech. While Trump was ambiguous last week as he encouraged allies to march on the Capitol, he sought to distance himself from riotous scene and videotape comments. No true supporter of mine could endorse political violence. No true supporter of mine could ever disrespect law enforcement or a great American flag, Trump said. No true supporter of mine could ever threaten or harass their fellow Americans. If you do any of these things, you're not supporting our movement, you're attacking it. In the address, Trump did not mention that he was being impeached for inciting January 6th Capitol riot. There were several commentators on the video highlighted the fact it was released just as impeachment proceedings were underway. Soon after, pro-Trumpers gathered online to discuss signs the president had planned to remain in power and overturn Biden's victory. Others expressed fear that the president sounds defeated. Wow. That's crazy. Trump supporters don't know what's next. And all you Trump supporters that went into the Capitol building, you may put your the person, Mr. President, in a situation where he might get impeached. He might get serious in trouble for that reckless thing that you did in January 6th. All right. So, as I was saying, this is the last article that I'm going to read about the January 6th Capitol Hill building. I will not talk about the situation again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to quickly talk about the fascist coup d'etat that the elitists tried to organize against FDR. I'm going to read quick articles about it and see if you find anything similar, guys. It is called the Wall Street Plushed, also known as the Business Plot. Also called the White House Plushed, okay? The Business Plot was an alleged political conspiracy in 1933 in the United States to overthrow the government of President Franklin D. Roosevelt and install a dictator, retired Marines Corps Major General Smedley Butler, selling that the Wesley businessmen were plotting to create a fascist veterans organization with Butler as its leader and use it as a coup d'etat to overthrow Franklin D. Roosevelt. In 1934, Butler testified under oath before the United States House of Representatives Special Committee on Un-American Activities. On these revelations, no one was prosecuted. At the time of the incidents, most major news media dismissed the plot, with the New York Times editorial characterized it as a gigantic hoax. Most agree that some sort of plot was discussed by General Butler. They disparage his contents as unrelatable. That's it, crazy. So what I'm gonna do, let's talk about who General Smiley Butler was, okay? Major General Smiley Dunnigan Butler, who lived from January 3, 1881 to June 21, 1940, nicknamed On Glimmed Eye, was a senior United States Marine Corps officer who fought in the Mexican Revolution in World War I. Butler was termed at the time the most decorated Marine in U.S. history. During his 34 years as a Marine, he participated in military action to the Philippines, China, and Central America in the Caribbean during the Banana Wars, in France in World War I, but later became an outspoken critic of American wars and consequences. Butler also exposed an alleged plan to overthrow the United States government. By the end of this year, Butler has received 16 medals, 5 for heroism. He is one of the 19 men to receive the Medal of Honor twice, one of the 3 to be awarded with both the Marine Corps Brevet Medal, along with the Wendell Neville and David Porter, and the Medal of Honor, and the only Marine to be awarded the Brevet Medal and 2 Medals of Honor for all for separate actions. He became involved in a controversy known as the Business Plot, when he told a congressional committee that a group of wealthy industrialists were planning a military coup to overthrow Franklin D. Roosevelt, with Butler sentenced to lead a march of veterans to become dictator, similar to fascist regimes at the time. The individuals involved all denied the existence of a plot and the media reclude the actions, but the final report by a special House of Representatives committee confirmed some of Butler's testimony. In 1935, Butler wrote a book called War is a Racket, where he described and criticized the workings of the United States and its foreign actions and wars, such as these in which he has been involved, including American corporation and other imperialist motivations behind them. After retiring from service, he became a popular advocate, speaking at meetings organized by veterans, pacifists, and church groups in the 1930s. He reminds me of, what's that woman's name? Senator Gubard? Yeah. Senator Gubard is a pacifist also. Let's read. When the bankers tried to plot it to overthrow FDR. I'm going to read a couple of articles on this. When the bankers plotted to overthrow FDR, this article comes from NPR.org. It was written by the NPR staff. It was a dangerous time in America. The economy was staggering, unemployment was ramping, and the banking crisis threatened the autonomous monetary system. The newly elected president pursued an ambitious legislative program that aimed at easing some of the troubles. He faced vitriolic oppositions on both sides of the political spectrum. This is despotism. This is tyranny. This is the annihilation of liberty, one senator wrote to a colleague. The ordinary American is thus reduced to the status of a robot. The president has not merely signed the death warrant of capitalism, but has ordained the mutilation of the Constitution unless the Friends of Liberty, regardless of party, band themselves together to regain their lost freedom. Those words could not be written for today's headlines. In fact, author Sally Denton tells Weekends on All Things Considered host Guy Raz they come from a letter written in 1933 by Senators Henry D. Hatfield of West Virginia bemoaning the policies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Denton is the author of a new book, The Plots Against the President, FDR, A Nation in Crisis, and the Rise of the American Right. She says that during the tense months between FDR's election in November and his inauguration in March 33, democracy hung in the balance. There was a lot at play. It could be gone very different directions, Denton says, though it is hard to imagine today. She says fascism, communism, and even Nazism seem like possible solutions to the country's ills. There were suggestions that capitalism was not working, that democracy was not working, she says. Some people even called for a dictator to pull America out of the Great Depression. When Roosevelt finally took office, he embarked on the now legendary First 100 Days, an ambitious legislative program aimed to reopening and stabilize the country's banks and getting the economy moving again. There was just this sense that he was upsetting the status quo, Denson says. Critics on the right worried that Roosevelt was a communist, a socialist, or the two of the Jewish conspiracy. Anti-Semitic crap. These anti-Semitic bastards. Boy. Critics on the left complained that his policies did go far enough. Some of Roosevelt's words didn't stop at all. Those barely remember today, there was a genuine conspiracy to overthrow the president. The Wall Street Plush, as it's known today, was a plot by a group of white-wing financiers. They thought that they can convince Roosevelt because he was their patrician class. They thought they can convince Roosevelt to relinquish power to basically a fascist military-type government, Denton says. It was a cockamamie attempt, she adds, and the fact that it even got as far as it did is pretty shocking. The conspirators had several million dollars, a stockpile of weapons, and even reached out to a retired Marine general, Smedley Darling Butler, to lead their forces. He had been a different type of person. It would have gone a lot further, Denton says. But he saw his choosing and reported it to Congress. Denton says that she was writing the book. She was struck by the parallels between the treatment of Roosevelt and that of Barack Obama. For example, a cottage industry, much like the birther movement, grew up in proving that Dutch descended Roosevelt was actually a secret Jew. It seems to me that history here, that there are times that we need to have a demon, somebody that's not in us, in order to solidify our fears and our anxieties, Denton says. And I don't know what is in for the impulse of the American body politic, but this is 75 years later, and some of the same impulses continue. That's interesting. They falsely accused Franklin Delano Roosevelt for being a... They had an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory saying that FDR was a secret Jewish person that was trying to overthrow the capitalist regime, and... Wow. A lot of these right-wing groups in the 1930s actually sided with the Nazis. That sounds ridiculously familiar. Sounds like what's going on now. Well, thank you very much for listening to my podcast. And again, you can go to my Instagram page at BlackKage840. It has my bios. Once you go to my bios, you'll see my Facebook page, you'll see my Twitter, and you'll see my Twitch account. Thank you very much, and I want you to enjoy your day. God bless you.